You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
All right, let's go. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com, Seattle Sports app. Really, wherever. Wherever you find us, that's where we are. And glad to be with you this morning. Glad to be with you on a Monday. It's just me and Maura today. Hi, Maura.
Hi.
Me and you. Justin ditched us to go scooting.
Yeah.
You think that's just what they call it? Scooting?
I don't know.
Scootering?
That doesn't sound right.
Well, whatever it is. He's off. He took off for Canada.
We'll have to points save that unknown. Question.
I'm going to go with scooting. I'm guessing that's not it, but I'm going to go with scooting at least until he comes back. I did what I was pledged to do. I'll have you know, I was driving to work. Excuse me. I was driving to work this morning, flipping through stations, and I heard a little Rush, right? Little New World Man came on, and I thought to myself, hey, I can listen to this now because the Blue Jays are toast.
Apparently it worked.
We all made our sacrifices. Mine was probably bigger than anybody else's, giving up Rush for an entire 4 days while the Blue Jays were in town, but it worked. And here we are, completed, Mariners in the wild card.
It was hard
Let's
not to
go.
Believe that something was at work yesterday after that ball went through Vlad Guerrero Jr.'s glove, and then they just kept
was that amazing?
Weird things happen.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, kind of looks like the Blue Jays may have quit. I'm not doing Toronto sports radio today, but that does not look like a team that is having
so
fun playing baseball.
That.
And they're sloppy, and they were, all over the place. If I was Charlie Montoya, I'd be a little worried about my job moving forward after the All-Star break. That's just me. I don't live in Toronto. I don't follow that team day in, day out. But there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of expectation there. And look, when the Mariners were losing, they weren't sloppy, right?
No.
They would lose. They wouldn't hit. They would do things that unfortunately didn't result in wins, but they weren't sloppy. And that's always been part of my defense of Scott Servais, even during that time. I was like, what are we talking about? You're going to be mad at this guy because they're not hitting? That's not up to him. He can't, grab a bat for them and go hit the ball. It's up to him to keep them mentally focused, et cetera. And I never felt like that waned for the Mariners. It sure looks like it has for the Blue Jays, but that is a side note, and we are not doing Toronto radio today, although I guess many of the Blue Jays fans are still heading north. Big backup at the border yesterday as everybody was heading back, although I heard there was some water on the road from the tears of the Blue Jays fans pouring out of their cars going home after the big sweep. It was, I always talk about how baseball follows you, and this was definitely, I'm sure, that weekend for a lot of people, whether it was, Friday night and that game with the walk-off. And I did feel a little bad for Sergio Romo. Like, that was a little bit sad. But on the other hand, I'm like, well, if he was going to do it for the Mariners, the least he could do is do it against the Mariners too, right? Like, he had his major struggles while he was here. He seems like an all-time great guy, great person, leader, elder statesman of the game, but he also seems like he's toast. And, when he gave it up on Friday night, then you get the, Santana on Saturday, Santana on Sunday. That's a pretty darn good week for the Mariners. Really, really good weekend. And so now you look at it, you're 8 games into this streak. You're, 16 of their last 19? That's exactly what they needed to do to get themselves out of the ridiculous hole they dug. So I'll ask you this. Do you think the fight helped? Because Shannon and I kind of fought about this a little bit on Friday. I'll ask you. They're 11-2 since the fight. Did the fight help?
I don't think it's the only factor, but I think it can only create more of a bond, right? Feeling like you're sticking up for your teammates who are being wronged.
I don't see how it didn't help. And I'm not, yeah. I'm with you. I don't think it's the only thing. And I don't know if Shannon thought that's what I was saying, that it was the only thing.
But is it a contributing factor? I would say yes.
I think it almost has to be. I mean, you're talking about a team that has a little bit different personality from last year. They've been forced to kind of bring it back around after, you know, the excitement and the drama and everything else from the end of last season, right, where it all looked like it was kind of coming together and you're thinking about the Mariners taking the next step forward. And it's hard to kind of build back up to being right at the exact same level you were at the end of last year. And it maybe took them a little bit of time to do that, right? It maybe took them a little bit of time to find their personality this year. Scott Servais mentioned it yesterday or over the weekend.
Well, certainly we are very resilient, and we used that word a lot last year with our team. This team is a different team. It is wired a little bit differently. We have some players that are, like, they're maturing, they're growing up. I think last year, you know, when Kyle Seager was a big part of our clubhouse from a leadership standpoint, whatever. So not having him here allowed other guys to kind of step out, and they're learning along the way. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing how the rest of the season plays out.
Well, and I don't think he's alone in that. I think we're all certainly looking forward to it. But I think that's interesting to hear that, look, just because you have a lot of the same players doesn't mean you have the same dynamic. Last year's team had no expectations, was easily able to play the nobody believed in us card, put their backs against the wall, but was able to kind of play the, hey, we're young and we're dumb and we don't care and we can kind of move forward. We don't have a care in the world. Well, this year's team couldn't really do that the same way, right? Yeah, you'd lost sort of the one older veteran in your clubhouse, and I think that had a factor. And then also you have started to feel the weight of what was expected of you. You're being picked as a playoff team. You've got the weight of a 20-something year drought here in Seattle. And I know Scott mentioned the drought over the weekend and how it was time to end that thing. So that's a very different feeling and a different makeup of what makes a team go. And you add in some new players, and they seem like fun guys, Suarez and Winker and Julio and Raleigh all of a sudden enters the equation. And it can take a little while for all of those things to sort of come together. Well, whatever it has come together. This is the team that we thought we were going to get at the beginning of the year. Led by its starting pitching, the starting staff has been tremendous. They are in every single game, and you cannot talk about this without talking about their starting rotation. A bullpen that, after some hiccups early in the year, has completely come around to now be one of the better bullpens in baseball. And, by the way, watching Matt Brash over the weekend, more of that, please. That was an absolute highlight for me. He was so, so nasty. And look, I still believe that he should be a starter long term and not a reliever, but you need help right now in your bullpen, and he can help you.
You got Matt Brash, who can punch tickets.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Our guy, Mark DeRosa, he said that at the beginning of the year. Wait till he sees him throwing 100 instead of 96. Yeah, he was filthy. But Munoz has kind of refounded again. Credit to Jerry DePoto, went out and got Ryan Borucki, and he's been really, really good. So, you know, all of a sudden the makeup of that group changes. Steckenrider didn't have it this year. You say goodbye to him and send him on his way. The lefty, Misevich, he didn't have it this year. You say goodbye, send him on his way, and find a way to recreate a bullpen that all of a sudden is among the best in baseball again. Well, how do you win close games? You better have a great bullpen. You better have starters that keep you in the game. And if you can come up with just enough clutch hits, you can do what they did this weekend. And certainly they had a few of those.
Here's the stretch by Simber in the right-hander's 0-2 pitch to Carlos Santana. Swing and a well-hit ball. Deep to right field. Back she goes, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. He did it again.
Yeah, that one was pretty good. So I will focus more on this today. Oh. Wait, como va?
It was a Santana weekend, man.
I saw Santana in Vegas. You? Yeah, he was great. It was like a trip we did from the station years ago. Bud Light sponsored a trip to Vegas. I went with Heather, and we saw Santana.
I feel sad that I missed out on all these trips you guys used to do.
It was fun.
We don't do that anymore.
I know. I don't know why we don't do that anymore. Call sales. Let's go. Let's go back to Vegas and see Santana again. I know, yeah, that was the best. We did that, and then we did, obviously, Ireland a few times. We should make that happen again.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, see if we can get it done. All right, anyway, congratulations to the Mariners and their fans. I will spend more time on that today than the All-Star game because I think it's a lot more important and a lot more interesting to me. But, yes, Ty France got screwed, and we'll discuss it next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, how sweep it is, and in fact, you can double that. That's two sweeps in a row now for the Mariners. The latest, the rare four-game variety, and it comes over a team they were trailing in the wild card race and who's made a habit of showing up here with a ton of fans and turning this into a Toronto suburb of some sort. Well, not this time. And much of the credit will go to the newest member of this team, Carlos Santana, who had himself quite the weekend.
Yeah, I think he's been here 12 days, and I think we're 11-1. Does that sound right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and certainly he has added so much to our team, but nothing more than obviously the home run last night, a couple more home runs today. I've always talked about all players. Home runs come in bunches, but the quality at bat, he's seeing the ball really good, and the experience level, it's huge. And it's rubbing off in a number of different ways in our clubhouse with our players. I can't say enough about what he's brought to our team in the clubhouse as much as he has on the field.
Yeah, neither were walk-offs, but two game-winning home runs in the bottom of the eighth Saturday and Sunday for Carlos Santana, switch hitter. Used to be one of the better hitters in baseball as a catcher when he came up with Cleveland. Had fallen off in recent years, and when he showed up here from Kansas City, I don't know how much was expected of him, but he has really made a difference. Both on the field and apparently in the clubhouse as well. Three home runs in 2 days. Pretty impressive for Carlos Santana. Plenty of heroes, though, this weekend, including Eugenio Suarez, who walked it off on Friday. A bullpen that really was tremendous. Scott Service, proud of them.
I think, you know, the couple guys that were struggling early on, Diego being one of them, was able to turn it around. And we keep giving him opportunities and trying to put him in the right spots, and that's been huge for us. You see the growth of Munoz. You know, that whole group down there really feeds off each other. And, you know, I think the addition of Verducci's helped as well. You know, a guy with a fresh start, got a good arms, left-handed. So as you look at all the pieces and how they've come together, they really feed off each other really well.
Throw in the starting rotation also, because obviously they've been incredible. Every single game this team has an opportunity to win. You put it together, and now the Mariners are 45-42. They've won 8 in a row, 16 of 19. They are tied for the final wild card spot, one game out of the second spot, two games out of the first spot. Pretty impressive considering where they were 3 weeks ago. It is certainly happening now. Night off, and then to Washington to take on the struggling Nats. No Julio tomorrow. He will serve his one-game suspension. Yes, it was cut in half upon appeal. And no, I still don't know what he did.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Hey, speaking of Julio, congratulations to Julio Rodriguez. He is currently the only Mariner named to the All-Star Game next week in Los Angeles. How impressive is it to reach that honor at the age of 21? Well, it's happened about once per year since 2000, but the players on that list are essentially a list of the best players in baseball. Pujols, Trout, Acuna, Harper, Machado, Albies. Essentially the best players in the league. As for Julio, he was pretty excited.
It was amazing just being able to, like, hearing that. It's like a dream becoming reality for me since I was a kid. And being able to also give that news to my parents was pretty, pretty surreal to me, honestly.
Is there anything that is not to like about Julio Rodriguez? By the
Absolutely
way,
not.
If you want to know what it was like for him and his parents.
That was just yelling inside of it. Like, I can't, I definitely need to improve my English to translate that Spanish into English, but they were really excited. They were really excited and proud, and they're going to be really excited to see me out there, too.
Are you proud of yourself?
Yeah. I feel really proud of myself. I feel really proud of the work that I've been putting on, and yeah, I'm happy.
There's just something so authentic about him. Everything he says just feels like it comes directly from the heart. Just amazing. Congratulations to him. Two sides to this coin, though. Few other Mariners got jobbed, and we'll obviously start with Ty France, who lost out to Vlad Jr. and Luis Arraez. Both have been excellent, but Arraez has really only played 30 games at first base for the Twins. He's mostly been a second baseman. That doesn't seem quite right. My guess is France eventually makes it, and that being hurt the last couple of weeks didn't help his cause. Scott Servais sticking up for his guy.
Very disappointed for Ty France. Ty France is the best first baseman in the league this year. And I certainly have a ton of respect for Vlad, and he's an awesome player, no question about it. But up until Ty's injury, I thought he was a shoo-in and makes it to the final vote and doesn't get in. So hopefully he still will get in, but very disappointed that he did not get in. Talking to the team today, you're always excited for the players to get in, and I didn't want to rain on Julio's parade at all, but really disappointed for Ty.
Yeah, I think we all are. No Logan Gilbert either, despite an excellent first half, and I thought Robbie Ray might have an outside shot based on his recent success and the name recognition, the Cy Young Award last year, but alas, not so much. Honestly, this stuff doesn't bother me that much. Getting no respect can be a rallying cry for a team, especially one which actually doesn't get any respect, not just having to make it up. So, not a lot of concern here on my part.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Meanwhile, a flurry of roster moves for the Mariners over the weekend. A few will matter a lot. First, they sent down George Kirby to get some rest before the All-Star break. With an off day today, they can keep their rotation otherwise intact, but give the youngster a little time off. He'll be back, though, after the All-Star break. This gives him essentially two turns through the rotation to rest, saves him at least one start's worth of innings. Still may be a struggle for him to get to the finish line this year, but moves like this certainly help without costing them much of anything at all. Also, great to see Matt Brash return from Tacoma. He did so with style, man. When we saw him last, he was struggling to find the plate as a starter. He pitched the seventh on Saturday and was just overpowering. Two strikeouts, 98 to 100 on the fastball, which is up a few ticks from when he was starting. The slider as nasty as ever. Look, relief pitchers are always overvalued at the deadline. So if you're Jerry DePoto and you see Matt Brash emerge as a major force, that would certainly help your leverage a ton. So, look, we're now less than 3 weeks from the deadline. We know what the Mariners need. Starting pitching depth and a second baseman. That's kind of your list. That's everything you need to know. We do that every hour here on the Mike Salk Show, quarter past the hour. I was thinking about something more as I was talking there and thinking about Scott talking about Luis Castillo and what he's done to turn it around. There have been a lot
Diego.
Of the... what did I say, Luis? I'm sorry. Diego Castillo. There have been a lot of adjustments on this Mariners team this year. And it's funny. Yeah. We kind of, I think, get into a habit as fans, media, critics, etc., of like, okay, well, that's who a player is. And we know baseball is a game of adjustments. The league adjusts, you adjust, the league adjusts, you adjust, etc. But, you know, Diego Castillo made some major adjustments. He talked about Munoz getting better partway through the season. He made an adjustment. He started throwing his slider differently. He started, he basically sped it up, throws it harder. It doesn't break as much, but it's got late movement and he's throwing it faster, and that has completely opened up things for him with the fastball. We talk about, obviously, Robbie Ray, who went from being okay, but a huge disappointment, back to being one of the best pitchers in baseball again by making an adjustment at some point this year. That's really important, and it's a credit to this coaching staff, Scott Servais, and everybody in it, a credit to the players for listening and for finding ways to do it themselves. But, again, a few weeks ago when people were trying to torch Scott, torch the management, et cetera, I held pretty firm to the fact that I think Scott Servais is a pretty good manager and that there's some pretty good coaches on this team. And that's why they've managed to dig their way out of the hole, and they're partly responsible for that.
Well, it's a really great point. This is the same team that we were pretty frustrated with just, a little over a month ago.
3 weeks ago. Yeah, but really three. It's crazy.
If you're going to, call the coaching out when they're struggling like that, then
yes,
you need to give them credit when they rebound.
Will we hear from any of those people who wanted Scott fired? Do we have to go back on tape when I was at home dealing with COVID? I remember it. I remember all the people calling up. Don't make us pull your calls. I expect everybody to text in and apologize to Scott at some point. All right. Coming up next, more will take us around a very busy weekend, a sweep and more next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, Seattle Sports app as well.
You're listening to the Mike Salk Show,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports Station.
Text message here from the 253 says, I'm not sure if the brawl, quote, helped the Mariners, but it was a turning point. The Angels are currently reaping what they sow and getting what they deserve. See, that's the point. when you were the team that, that needed to defend yourself from an aggressor and you all come up together and you weren't the ones who started it, yeah, I think it absolutely plays a role in helping to define who you are. And when you're the Angels and you're desperate and you're pathetic and you're the worst franchise around, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it sends you in the wrong direction. Ball don't lie. Ball don't lie at all.
Seemed to turn things around a bit for Winker, I'll say that.
That, yes.
He loved it. He was thriving in that brawl.
And I'd kind of forgotten about Jesse Winker. Now he's coming back tomorrow, which is great. They served that suspension. Didn't lose a single game while he was out. That's pretty good. I know we're going to kind of go around the weekend here in a moment. Can you explain beforehand what's going on with Zach Wilson?
Oh, boy.
What is the deal here? So Jets quarterback Zach Wilson... If you're online today, you may see his name, you may see some memes, you may not understand what's going on. He apparently is being called out by his ex-girlfriend. Is that right?
Yes. She claims she's apparently now dating one of his former college teammates and former good friend.
Okay.
So someone
who now plays for Washington, right? He's a wide receiver for Washington.
For the Commanders, yes. And someone on Instagram made a comment, a not nice comment, that she's kind of hopping around to...
Friends.
Yes.
Yes, going from friend to friend, so to speak.
She said that he has been sleeping with his mom's best friend, so he's the one that's hopping around.
Well, I can imagine everybody's taking that very well.
Yes.
Wow.
His mom is very active on social media usually, and apparently she has not posted anything for some time now. So kind of seems like it confirms it a little bit, right? Like she's not wanting to talk.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem. And I don't know much about Zach Wilson, and I don't want to take any shots at him. For all I know, he could be a perfectly great guy. But what you want to avoid is any sort of major fallout with your family if you're a quarterback. Because what I don't want to do is in 10 years...
Yeah, we can get blasted out of the ethers and you can receive Christ consciousness codes and see...
Hear that Zach Wilson's dating this lady.
Is this what happened to Aaron Rodgers?
Maybe. I mean, we know Rodgers no longer speaks to his family and now he's out there with Blue of Earth. Is this going to be Zach Wilson in 10 years?
Medicine is to zoom way out and to see the intricacies of...
If you're Zach Wilson's mom, you're mad at your friend, not your son right now, aren't you?
Probably mad at both, I would think. You're not happy with your son. Obviously, you're not going to speak to your friend again. You're not friends. But I don't know whether you're talking to your son. Like, you're pretty mad at your son, too, aren't you?
Yeah, we can get blasted out of the ethers, and you can receive Christ consciousness codes and see the potential of the human experience and dive and swim through the waters of the Akashic Ocean. And
let's go around the weekend.
You're never going to move past Blue of Earth.
No, I really like her. I talked about her quite a bit this weekend. I explained her to Heather.
We better go around the weekend before we get completely off the rails. All right. We'll start with the Mariners on Friday.
Okay.
George Kirby only made it 4 1/3 innings. He was pulled after giving up his 10th hit. He was then sent down to Tacoma to manage his overall pitching workload. Service says he'll be back after the break. I know we were talking off air and you were saying it's just mostly worked out to where the days off mean that they can give him a break. You're not too worried about it. But does the fact that they are monitoring that at least up your sense of urgency? I know you already wanted them to add another pitcher.
Yeah, it can't up mine because I don't know how they get to the finish line without it.
Yeah.
And the only way you do is just by hoping everybody stays healthy. That's not a course of action, as we know. Look how it worked out for them at the beginning of the year, depth-wise, in their outfield. No, they absolutely need to find another starting pitcher so that they're prepared for any eventuality. This doesn't worry me anymore. This is absolutely what you need to do. This is just smart management of a guy's innings and his limits, etc. Send him down here. You have a little extra time. This is like taking out your star before the beginning, the end of a quarter in basketball, so you can get him a little bit of extra rest, right? That's all this is. You're just finding a way to get him a little extra rest over the break. But no, my urgency is on 10. You need to find yourself another starting pitcher. I believe. I just disagree with Jerry and what he said to us on Thursday.
All right. Well, after his exit, the bullpen stepped up and going a combined 6 2/3 scoreless innings, but all kinds of weird stuff happened. In the eighth, Ken Giles left with shoulder tightness after retiring one batter. Then Seawald entered the game and was immediately told by the ump that the color of his glove was illegal. few.
Yeah, that was really strange. I don't know why that would be. He uses that glove all the time.
Yeah, it's. I don't get all of a sudden having an issue with it.
Yeah.
Luckily, he was able to use Eric Swanson's glove because Eric Swanson received a call in the eighth inning that his wife was in labor and had to leave the game.
Happens to all of us, right? Yes.
So it was Ryan Barucki who came in to face the team that DFA'd him just a few weeks ago in the 10th inning. He got the three outs that the Mariners needed, and Eugenio Suarez did this.
The 2-1. Swing, a high fly ball. It is by the foul pole. It is deep. It is deep. It is gone! Home run, walk it off, Eugenio Suarez. He has homered on back-to-back nights, and yes, indeed, the Mariners tag Sergio Romo in the 11th. And Suarez walks it off. He praises the heavens as he is getting absolutely swarmed at home plate.
That's a great call.
In some ways, the least surprising walk-off I've ever seen. Like, as soon as the pitch was thrown, you're like, oh, that's gone. Like, that was a mistake left directly over the middle of the plate, just kind of spinning up there. And he did what you're supposed to do, just deposit it into left field. He got all of it, every single inch.
They had a
inch.
Chance earlier, but there was some aggressive base running.
They had some issues earlier. And by the way, credit to Barucki. I think, if I'm not mistaken, not only did he get the three in the 10th, he got the three in the top of the 11th as well, both times with a runner on second base. So, I mean, Ryan Barucki, again, another sort of, we talked about adjustments that teams make over the course of a year. We'll give Jerry DePoto credit. Sergio Romo didn't work out. DFA him. Ryan Barucki does. He's been really good for them after really struggling for Toronto. So,
and how interesting that you get to see them
right
in the same game.
These two guys who were both kind of let go, one dealt, one DFA'd. I feel bad for Romo. I just feel like he's done. I'm surprised he wasn't DFA'd after that game as well. But
well, they've got a lot of issues.
They
right
do.
Now.
Good for Eugenio, man. He just seems like such a wonderful guy, and he'd never hit a walk-off home run before. He was very excited to get that done for the first time. He was telling everybody about it, that it was his first time.
What he calls to say, praising the heavens.
Hey, that's kind of who he is, man. Good vibes only, that's for sure.
Yeah.
By the way, I tweeted that after the game without context. Good vibes only, just figuring Mariners fans would respond to the Eugenio thing. And I got a response, a like, from a buddy of mine who I went to college with, who now owns a marijuana company. And I feel like he thinks I was talking about something other than what I was talking about.
Gonna get yourself in trouble.
Yeah, anyway.
That's funny.
That was Friday.
All right, Saturday. Another great outing from Robbie Ray, going six innings, giving up just three hits, one run, and striking out six. He did have a rough start to the fifth, loading the bases after a couple of walks and a single, but he retired the next three batters. And he spoke about the crowd after the game. It was packed in there, and he could really feel the energy.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, when fans are there, when it's loud every single pitch, when everybody's hanging on every single pitch, it's fun to play baseball. It's a lot of fun.
That's where you guys want to, those are the type of games you want to play in October, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that was playoff baseball right there.
He also called it electric before that because that's their word, of course.
Of course, yeah. And even when I went down to Tacoma to go see Kelnick and Sheffield and somebody else were all wearing their Electric Factory t-shirts down there. I think that's a little bit of a flex of like, yeah, I've been up in the big leagues this year, so I'm not wearing your AAA t-shirt, but whatever. Robbie Ray's improvement this year is astounding.
Yeah.
It's astounding that it happened like that. In the blink of an eye, to me, is one of the most impressive things I've ever seen from a pitcher. And, you know, look, we could all see it. We were all, if you didn't think Robbie Ray had a problem to start the year, you were fooling yourself. You were trying not to, like, believe. It's like when you don't like your job and you go home every day and people are like, hey, how's your job? And you're like, it's good, because you know the moment you say it's not good, you don't like it, like you can never go back. Like, once you admit it to yourself, then it's real. And I feel like anybody who didn't say that about Robbie Ray, that was why. Dude just completely turned it around. It's like that, you know, that same job, but all of a sudden they fire your boss and the new boss is great and all of a sudden you want to go to work again. He has been among the best pitchers in baseball since changing his repertoire. It's really an incredible testament to him.
Well, it just, I feel like it changes the way you feel about the whole starting rotation.
Yeah, you got an ace.
Yeah.
You got an ace all of a sudden, which is what you were lacking for the first couple of months of the year. He's now the guy who started on opening day for a reason. It's a major difference. Major, major difference.
Well, later in the game, Matt Brash made his debut out of the pen, pitching a scoreless inning where his fastball averaged 98.7 miles per hour. Here is him striking out Chapman to end the seventh inning.
Brash ready. Here comes a 3-2 to Chapman again. The pitch, swing and a miss. Struck him out top of the zone. He got a piece of it, but Cal holds on.
You got Matt Brash who can punch tickets.
He was certainly punching them on Saturday. That was awesome. That was one of the highlights of the weekend. You know what a big fan I am of Matt Brash, and I'll admit, I still want him to be a starter long-term, both for him and for the Mariners, but this is what they need right now, clearly, and he can be so electric and dominant, and, you know, you get to see that when he's on, when he's not throwing balls, it's really hard to hit him, especially now with another couple miles an hour in the fastball and whatever confidence he's gotten from whatever he's done in AAA here the last couple of months. Good for him, man. That is such a huge lift for this team.
Yeah. Do you think that starter is still an option down the road for him in their minds?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I hope so.
We'll have to wait and see.
But again, as I've said before, I've been wrong on this before.
Yeah.
I was adamant that the Red Sox should make Jonathan Papelbon keep him as a starter. And when they moved him to being a closer, obviously, it just completely unlocked who he was. And the difference with Papelbon is I don't think, and I say this with respect, I don't think he had the mentality to be a starter. He needed to have his options limited, so to speak.
He was so intense.
That's one word for it. I don't know that he was a guy who's going to think through the game over the course of seven innings.
I think I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not calling him the brightest guy in the city. But anyway, he it worked for him. I don't know if that's Matt Brash. I mean, Brash to me seems like somebody who may have the ability, and if he can unlock one more pitch, I'm still not convinced that his future path is bullpen. But man, is he good. And he is really fun to watch right now doing what he's doing.
All right, unfortunately, at that point in the game, the Blue Jays were getting a lockdown pitching performance from their starter, Manoa, too. But Carlos Santana smashed a two-run home run off of him in the seventh that ended up being the game winner for the Athletics.
Pitch to Santana. Swing on drive to deep right. There it is. His first home run as a Mariner. Carlos Santana. It's 2-1 Seattle. And the Mariners have the lead here, bottom of the seventh against Alek Manoa.
I know this is mostly about Santana, but give me just a moment. Alek Manoa is filthy.
Yeah.
That guy was ridiculous. He is 100% deserving of being an all-star, and he was nasty. But Santana, man, I know we're going to talk more about him in a second, so we can just kind of move it along. But wow, what a weekend for him.
Yeah, and then Diego Castillo had kind of a hold-your-breath ninth inning, but he worked his way out of some trouble.
And he was pitching his third game in a row because Seawald was down for the night. You knew that was going to be a bit of a challenge, but good on him. He found a way to get through it. That's what the good pitchers do.
All right, then. Yesterday, the M's found themselves down 4-1 in the fifth after Springer and Tapia home runs and a two-run single from Bichette. Luck, however, was on their side. Mm-hmm. Haggerty hit into what looked like an inning-ending double play, but the throw bust through the webbing of Vlad Guerrero Jr.'s glove and drove in a run that seemed to spark a bit of a comedy of errors for the Blue Jays. Julio then had an RBI single to make it a 4-3 game. A Cal Raleigh sac fly in the sixth scored Carlos Santana to tie the game, but Bo Bichette hit a solo shot to give the Blue Jays the lead again in the seventh.
Yeah, he got all that one.
But then who else but Carlos Santana refusing to be outdone, hitting his second home run of the game that, again, ended up being the game winner.
Here's the stretch by Simber in the right-hander's 0-2 pitch to Carlos Santana. Swing and a well-hit ball deep to right field. Back she goes, and this one is gone. Goodbye, baseball. He did it again. Carlos Santana, his second home run of the afternoon, and it gives the Mariners a 6-5 lead here in the bottom of the eighth inning.
I mean, I'm starting to run out of words for Santana. I mean, he really had such a fantastic weekend. And then a little credit to Paul Seawald, who came in at the end of that one and made it simple and just, hey, let's move it along. Look, the Mariners, this is a weird series. You got two things that maybe happen once a year in baseball, not just to one team, and they happened over the course of four games. A ball bouncing off someone's glove into the stands for a home run, which we saw on Thursday night, and then a ball literally going through a glove, which almost never happens, but if the webbing's not tight every once in a while, that'll go down.
And I saw Blue Jays fans complaining that that's the second time that's happened to him this year.
Really?
So it's like, what are you doing with your gloves?
That is a good question.
If it happens one time, then maybe you didn't know there was an issue, but that's weird.
Fire clubby?
I don't know. But yeah, I saw some complaints from Blue Jays fans, like, again? And I
that
was like,
that is bizarre.
What?
Well, there you go. Well, good on the Mariners. Maybe then there's, you know, something to be said for the, again, we said the Blue Jays were sloppy. Maybe part of that is not checking the webbing of your glove.
Yeah.
Be prepared. Maybe he's not a Boy Scout.
All right, we will move into some NFL news from around the weekend. Adam Schefter talked about his thoughts on Jimmy Garoppolo, and he doesn't think he's going anywhere anytime soon, and the Seahawks may be part of the reason.
So if the 49ers would be even more hesitant to release Jimmy Garoppolo for the idea and the thought that there would be potential he could wind up in the same division playing for Seattle. If the 49ers needed even more incentive to hold on to Jimmy Garoppolo and not release him, that would be it. So I don't expect that San Francisco is going to be releasing Jimmy Garoppolo anytime this summer. And then the question becomes, is there another quarterback situation? Is there another team that suffers a quarterback injury, that has some quarterback adversity, that has some quarterback challenges?
Hmm. Poor Mariners. Poor Seahawks. Sorry. It's just not... This isn't working out their way, I still don't believe. Look, I trust Schefter on this because if that's exactly what I would do if I were the Niners, why release him? Right? I mean, you can just kind of hang on to him. If Cleveland doesn't want him, fine, which surprises me. I still think they'll end up trading him to Cleveland. But, okay, you kind of hang on and hope that a quarterback gets hurt, which seems to happen every preseason, and then you're in the catbird seat. So it's too bad because he really would be a good
figure. They
don't
owe him guaranteed money until the season starts, I think.
So if you're the Seahawks, why wouldn't you trade them something? Hey, look, as of now, we're the only team. I know you don't want him in the division, but we'll give you a fourth-round pick. All right. To me, that would be worth it if I was the Niners rather than taking the risk on, you know, allowing this to kind of go on and on. The only reason they wouldn't is if they're afraid that the Seahawks would be that good with Jimmy Garoppolo, which should make you want him even more if you're a Seahawks fan.
Yeah.
They know him better than anybody. They don't want him in Seattle. I don't blame them. I want him in Seattle.
Jimmy G. We'll see what happens.
I'm not
there.
Giving up the dream, Maura.
also, a little bit of sad news. Former Seahawks offensive lineman Dwayne Brown was arrested at LAX over the weekend. He reportedly had an unloaded firearm in his carry-on luggage as he attempted to pass through security. He was booked on Saturday afternoon and released Saturday evening with a court date scheduled for early August.
Yeah, that's kind of a strange situation. I mean, it doesn't sound like he was doing anything particularly dangerous, but... You're going through a metal detector,
man. It's just something that everyone knows you can't
bring right
through security, so it's very odd. He never seemed like a guy that ever did anything wrong or had any kind of erratic behavior.
Right.
So you just wonder what he was thinking.
Yeah, and I'm going to assume that he has some sort of a permit to have the gun, et cetera, yeah, but that he just left it in his bag and didn't think about it.
Maybe, yeah.
But that's a pretty big no-no. I mean, you see people at TSA every time dumping out their water bottles. That seems like a little bit more like, oh, I forgot there was water in there.
It seems
I had my gun in the bottom of my bag. You're going to want to remember that next time. That's bad luck.
All right, well, we'll move into some golf for you here to wrap
finally
up, okay?
We've been wasting our time.
Oh, my goodness.
Time for golf.
Xander Schauffele wins back-to-back PGA Tour titles with a one-shot win and even par 70 at the Scottish Open. Here he was after.
It was nice to sort of hit a few better shots coming down the stretch and kind of calmed the ship here. It was looking pretty bad for a bit, but this one's extra special because of that. It's incredible. I mean, just look around the fans. They've been pushing me along all day. This is, you know, the first of many co-sanctioned events, and it's just an honor to win the first one.
So I watched that quite a bit of the Scottish Open, as you might imagine, over the weekend, which was nice because it was done by, you know, pretty early in the day, being in Scotland and all. Schauffele's playing some really good golf heading into the Open. He's one of the best players in golf not to win a major right now. So I certainly wouldn't mind seeing him win this coming week. Jordan was in it, which was great. He kind of choked late in the round, just kind of got away from him. He had a double bogey, and that's about as mad as I've ever recall seeing him. So But you got some of the best in the world who are all playing good golf. They're going to St. Andrews this week, the home of golf, legendary course, 150th anniversary of the Open. Tiger's going to be there. This week's going to be fun, man. This is a great week for golf coming up.
All right, and there was also another golf tournament happening this weekend, the American Century Championship. That's a celebrity golf tournament held in Nevada. Tony Romo won for the third consecutive year, beating Mark Mulder and Joe Pavelski with a 5-foot birdie putt on the second hole of a playoff. But Steph Curry might have had the shot of the day with a 97-yard eagle.
Jeez.
Steph, go in. Oh, yeah. About it. About that to turn around your fortunes. Bit of a slow start for Steph until, well, he knows what it's like to drain it from long distance.
There you go. A hole-out eagle for Steph. Just shout out my friend Chris Yorks, who I was playing with last week. And he holed out from about 170 on hole one at Druids Glen for an eagle. So, Chris, congratulations. You and Steph have a lot in common. I have long said when he was playing that if I could be any person in the world, I wanted to be Mark Mulder.
Really?
Yeah, what a life. You're pitching every 5 days, easy as pie. You're a lefty. Nobody can touch you. You're good looking. What a life Mark Mulder had. Still does, apparently, because he's also this good at golf. He's also a really nice guy. He used to work at ESPN. I don't know if he still does. Used to have him on shows now and again. He was a good analyst and a lot of fun to talk to. So I never told him that whole story, though. I thought he might find it weird.
Probably. I've always thought it'd be cool to be you.
It would be pretty cool to be him, though. I'm just saying. Good trip around the weekend. Thank you, Moore. It was a great weekend. Personally, what I'll tell you, I went on an oyster hunt this weekend. Heather and I drove north. Ooh. We had oysters both Friday night and Saturday afternoon. Went to Taylor Shellfish on Saturday up in Chuckanut. That was awesome. It was just a glorious, perfect, wonderful weekend. It was so nice out. Mariners were winning every day. Everyone's in a good mood. Summer's arrived in Seattle. What could be better, man? What could be better than this? All right. Oh, and my kids aren't here. So that was a little nice part of it also. All right. I've been saying something for quite some time about the Mariners. Something very simple. Something very, very pure. And it's finally starting to happen. I'll tell you what it is next. Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com.